Min campus alihor, miai Karsten Schwine. Il-għakom l-ura għal tillet program fil-sensiela minn campus għal-ieħor, matul din il-sensiela nivjaġġaw virtualment fl-immaġinazzjoni permezz ta' narrativi u stejjer illi l-mistednin tagħna jaqsmu magħna minn ġimgħa l-oħra. Il-mistednin tiegħi f'din il-programm huma professuri, akademiċi, managers, ħafna drabi jiġu mid-dinja tal-studji soċjali, tal-politika kulturali, tal-edukazzjoni għolja u permezz tar-rakkonti tagħhom nesploraw ftit dak li ġiri nsejħu career path bl-Ingliż. U naraw ftit huma minn xi għaddew wara l-ewwel żewġ programmi kien hemm min waħad gost ikkummenta li meta tisma' programmi bħal daw jekk xejk tikkonsla. Tinduna li ħafna nies ħanajdu hekk biex nużaw l-espressjoni jaslu fejn jaslu mhux permezz ta' xi vija maestra, xi triq twila u dritta li huma jkunu jafu eżattament fejn qed wassalhom, imma jkun hemm ħafna żigużajk u modijiet biex jaslu fejn eventwalment jaslu. Ħafna minn nies li nitkellmu magħhom f'dan il-programm jesprimu. Esprimu dan il-vjaġġar, kemm fiżiku, kemm intellettwali, kemm l-avventuri illi huma jiltaqgħu magħhom u għalhekk anki jagħmlu ftit aċċenn għall-istorja personali tagħhom u dik professjonali. U b'hekk nispera illi l-karattru dawn in-nies joħroġ anki iktar ċar u iktar sħiħ. Fil-programm tal-lum għan il-taqa ma' ħabib antik tiegħi li fil-fatt ilma nara ftit minħabba l-pandemija, dan huwa Ertin Renefsan. Ertin huwa researcher avvanzat u mexxej ta' proġetti ġewwa l-Università Helsa ta' Brussell illi fir-rwol partikolari tiegħu inaqdet ma' aġenzija sezzjoni f'eħda l-Università stess li jisimha SMET. Għaliex l-akronimu jfisser Studies in Media, Innovation and Technology u jagħmel kif ħajgħidilna ħafna xogħol li jaqbad aspetti kulturali, jaqbad aspetti dwar id-digitalizzazzjoni, oħrajn finanzjari, oħrajn ekonomiċi u jġibhom flimkien. Ilu hemmhekk l-università għal dawn l-aħħar 11 sena mill-2010 kien ġab id-dottorat tiegħu sentej qabel fl-2008 minn ġewwa l-Università Parigi, Pantheon Sorbonne, kien studja l-industriji ekonomiċi u kien studja ktesi fuq l-istrutturi tas-suq u d-diversità li kif tisimgħu huwa suġġett ewlieni fl-studji tiegħu. Mexxa ħafna proġetti ta' riċerka fuq livell lokali, nazzjonali, Belġan u anke internazzjonali. Proġetti li kienu mejjuna fondi minn il-Kummissjoni Ewropea u UNESCO fost l-oħrajn u kif ukoll kumpaniji privati bħal Google per eżempju. Kiteb ħafna pubblika ħafna dinja d-dinja tiegħu, id-diversità, l-innovazzjoni fil-mezzi tax-xandir, il-politika tax-xandir u l-pjattaformi audiovisivi li kif nafu anke iktar u iktar permezz tal-pandemija ħafna minna resqu lehom. Għallut minn għadron kiexi forma ta' salvazzjoni biex nibqgħu għaddejjin minn ġewwa djarna jew il-postijiet ristretti tagħna u għalhekk il-konverzazzjoni miegħu ħadd wassal għal ftit analiżi dwar l-industri kreativi. Però ma jonqos kif qatt qabel illi jkun hemm dawk l-sfumaturi, dawk l-aċċenni personali u f'dan il-programm ukoll bħal ta' qablu nisimgħu anki ħanajtek is-soundtrack ta' ftit minn ħajjet il-mistieden tiegħi Ertin illum u naħseb li tieħdu gost biha. Lagħtin semmu l-mużika nixtieq nerġa' nirringrazzja lil Davinia Galia u ARC Consultancy Bifim kien ma numru ta' sħab oħra li nsemmi minn programma liħor u d-dettali tagħhom li hemm ilin fuq il-medja soċjali ituna din il-mużika mediterranja sabiħa bħala parti mill-proġett mill-dinja. Għalhekk nistudinkom tibqgħu miegħi biex nisimgħu l-intervista ma' Ertin Renifsan. I'm going to start off this conversation with my guest today, who you've heard in the introduction in Maltese, is Ertin Renifsan. Ertin, hello. Thank you for joining me on this program.
Hi, hello. Thanks for inviting me.
We're recording this while you're in Brussels, in Belgium. I'm in Valletta, in Malta. It's a particularly hot day here, but when our listeners will be hearing this on Campus FM or also online through the readily available podcasts, they might imagine a bit of a split environment sort of between maybe the cooler north and my years in Brussels remind me that even in the summer months, and you told me that a few days ago when preparing for this program, cannot be so sunny and warm, while here it tends to be so sunny and warm year round.
Yeah, that's how I see Malta from my little experience here. Yeah, no, here it's, well, today it's 20 and we are lucky. So you can imagine when, when we are not lucky how cold it can get.
That's not too bad. Ertin, since we started off on this sort of also informal and personal note, and that's sort of the way this program tends to pan out, sort of with the early part looking a little bit at the early steps of these career paths that listeners are following through various guests and various experiences being shared, centering on research and professional development in various areas. Most of the time, I speak with people who I've got to know through the field of cultural policy or arts management and the number of networks I've been happy to and I've been lucky to be part of at some point in my life, and in our case as well. There was a particular network which possibly we'll refer to later on, which a few years ago now, we don't need to go into how many years, because they start adding up, brought us together sort of on the topic of cultural diversity. However, if later on we'll come into the more here and now and your current affiliations and work and research, work and interests as well. If we had to look back a little bit, could you say that with the benefit of hindsight, were there a few simple steps which took you into the field of research and cultural matters and cultural diversity? Or was it more of a random experience? Where did sort of your interest and your commitment as well to the field come from, if you could look back and say?
Yeah, sure. Actually, I've been thinking a bit about this, there are actually two phases, let's say. The first one that was definitely more random, and when I was young, I could not say I would have become a researcher in a university in another country. But then since I'm here, it has become more, a bit clearer. So I got my PhD already quite some time ago. It's 2008. Until I got my PhD, it was not so clear because initially when I was in high school, I've always been a very good student. So I was just thinking, okay, what can I do once high school is finished? Should I go to the university? At some point, I even wanted to go into the more musical career and become a professional there. But I quickly realized, and I still believe it very deeply, that it's very difficult to be talented and successful. There are so many examples of talented people who never get successful. there are so many examples of not talented artists, especially in musical field, but maybe many that get really too successful. It's very annoying when you are a bit liking these fields. And I don't know, that will, that may sound a bit childish, but you also have that example that struck me of Nirvana as front singer, of Kurt Cobain, who was talented and successful and committed suicide. And I thought, maybe it's, you need to have, to have either a very balanced life or very, very strong nerves to be into this career. So maybe go for something easier. Just go for a job where you will, that probably you will not like too much, but you can do music the weekend, in the evening, even maybe make some concerts in the weekend, this kind of thing.
This is a really interesting point you made, Ertin, because I guess our listeners can sort of maybe relate to it themselves if they're involved, as many are, maybe in the arts field or in the performance field, as amateurs in the good sense of the word, sort of the evening activity or the weekend activity, for example. And the same applies to the field of sports, for example. Weeks ago when this will be broadcast and days ago when we're actually recording, when the Olympic Games were on, there were a few instances of top level art athletes sort of pulling out or realizing their limits, even on their mental health, and obviously on the one hand people criticizing that, but on the other hand being applauded for bringing out into the clear that as human beings we're very complex and we need to be complete in the way we address ourselves. So yes, it's true. There's a lot of sort of steps. Maybe one plans and one takes, and it's really important, as the Greeks, as we learned from the Greeks, to sort of know thyself in a way. But that doesn't come very easy early on. Somehow you discover that step by step.
No, it's a very good example. Especially, it's even worse for sport, indeed, because for most sport, you need to be successful, or at least start to be successful when you're still a child. Although I have respect for these top-level sports people, I'm also always wondering when they are successful. Okay, but what kind of challenge have you had? And are you so happy now with what you get? And indeed, I assume you're referring to what's her name, to the Simona Biles case.
That's right. I have that in mind. She stepped out.
It's that's indeed a quite striking case. Yeah, of this. I didn't think about connecting to such a high level profiles, but yeah. That's indeed the kind of same issue that
in a way also from what you were saying, and even from other conversations that are coming through in this series, and that maybe listeners can relate to, that somehow culture, the arts, well, I won't say only now, because it's been like that even if we think back of other eras and other periods in human history and development. But the spectacularization, the level of performance and show business, which performers of any kind, including artists, sometimes get maybe caught up in without them really planning to be caught up in at such a level, sometimes can be very, very, very challenging. It's not just the fact that you create your art and express yourself culturally. And I guess sometimes it goes even beyond high-profile artists. It could be sometimes related to a tourism product or service. Mm-hmm. And somehow people who do their thing quietly get thrown into the limelight beyond any expectation of theirs. But that's a bit the commercialization element that comes in. Would you see it that way?
Yeah, definitely. And actually, this is the whole thing of the cultural sector, that they have these economic and cultural aspects. We're talking about commercialization. That's exactly where the contradiction is, that there is so much pressure on the creators, but also because they are in very big industries. Remember these numbers that showed that in the end, the creative sectors in Europe, taken as a whole, they are like if not the first, maybe the second sector, or even the third in Europe in terms of contribution to GDP, in terms of employment is also huge. So yeah, they are in these huge economic sectors, whereas the creation process remains something that is escaping a standardization to some extent. So it's, yeah, very difficult for them, and probably also in the sports sector, as we just discussed.
In your case, Ertin, you seem to have said that step by step, you sort of started finding maybe a balanced way into where you wanted to be in the sector.
Yeah, well, so I had this this idea that, okay, I should go for, let's say, a normal job. In France, when you are a good student, you go to this so-called the preparatory classes that leads you to engineering schools, to business schools, and so on. I went to the one leading to business schools. But then I did not end in a business school. I ended in what is called the École Normale Supérieure. And that's really the place where they teach people to become teachers in the high schools, but also to become researchers more and more. And so I went in this. It was really just because, okay, I was subscribed to something. I got to the oral defense. It went really well. People who went there, most of them, they wanted to go to business schools anyway. So I also had a number of free seats, and then I stayed there. And even when I stayed there, I thought, okay, I'm going to become a teacher and have something a bit easier. But then I could not even say exactly why and how, but I became really interested in research. And my supervisor, Professor Joël Farchi, my supervisor for the master, when I told her, I would like to do a PhD, she said, oh, you should work on cultural diversity. That was exactly, at the moment, yeah, before it was adopted by everyone, but it was at the moment when there were the discussions after the declaration of the UNESCO for the convention became the convention after. And then, there was all this discussion about the diversity of cultural expressions. And she said, yeah, look, this is something that is going to become more and more important at international level. And well, she was right. And I picked up on the topic and I stayed in the academic field afterwards. It's not as I planned because now, I'm not going to complain. I really love the job, as I will have plenty of time to say after. But it's a job that takes time. Not so many things to do, but every time you have a moment when you're free, actually you're thinking about, okay, but I could also be reading this. Or, this article that I've been lying around for a few months, I have 2 hours in front of me. Instead of watching a movie, I could just simply write it. So it's the kind of job, as you know very, very well, that making you always feeling a bit guilty if you're not working, let's say. Or even if you're working, that you could be working faster. And kind of
the way you describe it is a bit like a guilty pleasure, though, that you can sort of take your time and establish a rhythm, which is not all the time on, but you also learn to... I had a professor at university myself during my undergrad in English who speak of mulling things over. So giving time to time as well was something I like to say. Let's switch to another pleasure, maybe less guilty this time, and come to the first musical break. Ertin, there are two tracks which you've chosen. And the first one I'm not familiar with, Makeba. Why are we going to listen to this?
Yes, so Makeba is a song by a French artist named Jane. And why did I choose this one? First, to give some secrets about how it's prepared. So you told me, okay, go for two tracks. And I was thinking, okay, let's try not to have something too depressing or a bit too brutal, this kind of thing. So I thought, okay, let's go for something a bit. And for this first one, I also, that's a song I think that can be danced over. But it's also, I think, one that is very important for me for many reasons. I think the most obvious to share with everyone is that it's the title itself. It's Makeba. So it's referring and it's dealing like very, it's not very detailed and not very thorough, but it's dealing with Miriam Makeba, so the South African singer. And of course, then it's going to remind not only about her musical skills, but somehow for people who would know at least about her, it's going to remind about her fights against apartheid and so on, life in general. And then Jane is a singer I discovered very simply because my sister told me, oh, look, there is this singer. She's partly Malagas. And my parents come from Madagascar. Myself, I was born and raised in France, but my parents come from Madagascar. So having somebody a bit Malagas was fun for me to musically meet. Her first album where this track is called Zanaka, which means also child in Malagas. So yeah, these are good reasons, I think, to have this one on top of the fact that it's been nice.
That's great. Okay, let's listen to it. Renaissance promised us that was a really good track, and listeners will probably also started tapping their feet unless they could actually dance to it, which would have been a good thing. Ertin, you told us a little bit about, well, a number of things already in our first part of the program today. Somehow also really throwing interesting light on even the idea of the series, which in Maltese would translate into sort of campus hopping in a way, or connecting campuses. And in your experience, the next step I would like to take with you is sort of going from studying as a student and researching as a student, including your PhD studies, to sort of keep on doing that, but actually getting a job for that and being employed to do that. Can you tell us a little bit about that transition, how it happened? Because it also involved crossing a border.
Yeah, exactly. So as I was saying, I was doing my PhD in France, in Paris one, actually, under the supervision of Professor Farshi. And when I finished, I had a short postdoc experience still in Paris. But I wanted really to go out of Paris and then preferably out of France. Because in what was mainly my field then, that you can call cultural economics, so basically economic theory, but applied to the cultural, to the media sectors, I had this feeling that there was just too much competition in Paris. As simple as that. And then I would have had to wait for all these people to retire before I could have a spot. As simple as that.
Yeah. I think many students and people who are graduating and doctoral and postdoctoral students can really relate to that. So what would you do? Put yourself in line indefinitely or maybe try to branch out?
Yeah, no, exactly. Either you can really stay close to a person or even a department and you're like, okay, I really have my niche here. Otherwise, yeah, you need just to move somewhere and find another opportunity. So I was really looking hard to move abroad. And then, well, I didn't end that far because I finished and I'm still living in Brussels. But also I'm changed a little bit also the what I was doing because officially I was in economics and then now I'm in department. I'm in the research center. Sorry. This is called SMIT and it's more, related to the communication science, communication studies. So SMIT, this is a research center. I think it's one of the biggest now in Europe dealing with social sciences and digital technologies at the same time. It has this, it belongs to two entities. More classically, let's say it belongs to university. It's part of the Free University Brussels. So the Flemish, Free University of Brussels. But it also belongs to an entity called IMEC that is very known in its field, but apart from it, it's quite specific because it's one of the leading research centers dealing with digital technologies and especially regarding microchips. I think there are two or three in the world that are really researching how can you make the chips smaller and smaller, flexible, having them dealing with also a very specific kind of data, this kind of thing. I'm not an engineer. I don't have that knowledge, but I'm part of more the social science branch of this entity. And I've been there for 11 years now. I've been working on different types of research projects in there, doing also a little bit of teaching, as I was also doing during my PhD. But yeah, mainly on research projects.
Mm-hmm. From your experience, 11 years now, but also through your collaboration with other institutions, with your peers in other campuses and other research centers. Could you, I don't know, maybe somehow describe a little bit some of the mechanisms, sort of the way collaboration works and collaboration operates, even the fact that you work in one organization, which somehow stems from another two organizations, and there are maybe more technical and mechanical and engineering aspects to it, but the potential for collaboration, for exchange, somehow lies at the heart of such, let's call them campuses, although they are not, strictly speaking, maybe in the classical way. But they are centers of exchange where people with different experiences come together. And we know that this is not restricted only, say, to Belgium or to France. But it's a reality that in Europe is one of the maybe most current features of what Europe even tries to promote itself as doing.
No, definitely. I think something good to know for your listeners, if they are, I don't know, students especially, but even as professionals, if they don't have connection with the research field, is that in the research field, as far as I know, and I think it's even more for my colleagues in more technical fields, collaboration is very important. Okay, it happens that I can maybe write a paper or a book chapter alone, but most of my work and the most interesting aspects of my work, it's all about collaboration.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It takes different forms. The first one is indeed, as you say, yeah, also due to these the connections that my center has internally. It's first a connection with people from other fields. So let's say kind of a multidisciplinary collaboration. So since our work, 90% of our work is related to digital technology, we are to work with more engineers, researchers, or also engineers in the companies that are not mm-hmm. necessarily researchers on a continuous basis. So it's first this kind of collaboration with people from the field of social sciences, but also with from more technical fields. I have colleagues who are modeling, for example, with digital technologies applied to health, and they're going to work mm-hmm. with nurses, with medicine mm-hmm. within hospitals half of their time or even more than that. So that's the first type of collaboration. The other one that is very important for me, but here it depends a bit on everybody's profile, is indeed this more international collaboration. And again, it's also something I value a lot, but I've been working on European projects, even before I came here in Brussels. And it's really, really interesting to be working with people from all the countries, with also, especially when they have then different profiles than you, it's a lot of being lost in translation because you don't speak the same language or you speak a broken English. You don't have the same interests. For example, if you're talking with somebody from a private company, so they have to make money. If not now, at least it has to make money in the coming years. Mm-hmm. And that's not my objective. And then people, yeah, that have also different ways to look at things, so more engineer approach rather than social science approach, basically. Yeah. But yeah, this collaboration between campuses and beyond, it's really important and interesting. So that's great part of the reason why I'm staying here. So it's mm-hmm. really interesting.
I think you mentioned the financial elements, and so you mentioned industry, and for example, on a local level, but it's just one example of many realities around the world, of the links with industry and with the private sector, and also where funding lies sometimes is very important. And you said sort of maybe you're in a position where you don't need to direct everything you do in order to make money out of it. However, financing is very important for research and how do you sustain it? So I think my question is that sort of within your field, also because it touches the arts, culture. We'll talk a bit later in the third part also about research you've been engaged in and publications looking at culture and economy. In sort of very blunt terms, where does the money come from and how important is that of having this lifeline sustained?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I have a bit, an exceptional profile, I think, compared to most social scientists. Because I'm not a professor. I'm teaching, but really like very few hours per year. And it changes a bit every year. I'm really a researcher now, a senior researcher for a few years. And so, that means also I need to have the money coming from the research projects to back me. Then the sources for this, is going to be mainly public money. Sometimes we have contracts with companies, but it's, in the total, it's not that much for me or for my colleagues. So it's a lot of public money, but still most, if not all of this public money, we have to have it through the competitions.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not going to enter into the contents right now, but we are doing, for example, contract studies for entities such as, local government or the European Commission. And that means, we have to file a proposal and to have the best proposal to get that money. We have a lot of money that comes for funding for projects, research projects. So they are a bit longer. They are between 2 or 4 years for some of the more national projects.
Mm-hmm.
And again, to get this, you have to write your proposal to really put in there. Okay, this is what we want to do. You also have to have a very good CV, or to have the, with you, the people with a very good CV. Basically, that's the two things, that and the price sometimes, that's the two things that are going to allow you to have the money, well, to keep having a salary and to keep doing the job I'm doing here afterwards. Yeah. So indeed, that's something very important. Mm-hmm. Even though indeed we're not here to make profits, we need to break even somehow.
Yes. And somehow sustain yourself. And it's interesting because you're sort of explaining very briefly how sort of the work a researcher like you do is made of many components. There's sort of the research which is on the topic itself, but before that, maybe there are many other aspects of bringing people together, bringing people with strong CVs together, and then making an application, making a bid, which really sort of makes the job very diverse in itself.
It is, yeah, and also also because the topic should evolve a bit, but definitely what I'm doing on a daily basis, it's on the paper, it's mainly working on the project, especially everything that is really, let's say, counted, like every deliverable that we said, for example, to the commission, you're going to have this. Okay, this I'm working officially on it, but I also spend a lot of my time, it depends on the deadlines I have, on writing proposals that mm-hmm. are going to allow me then to sustain the next month or years mm-hmm. of my own position and of my colleagues here. And then there are other things that are a bit around the project, not always expected in the beginning, but that you do because it's interesting, because it has some societal impact, or because it's good for your CV. Like all the publications, not all, but many of the publications, you don't necessarily say to the funding agency, I'm going to have this, but you mm-hmm. have the opportunity, so you spend a bit of time on doing
and
that.
And you invest in that, sort of.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's a bit of a balancing between all the things you have to do.
Etienne, we'll switch back to our discussion, also to the publications element in the third part of our discussion. But let's catch our breath again and listen to another tune. This was one I remember from a few years ago on French airwaves and Belgian airwaves. Why are we going to listen to Papatoué?
By Stromae.
Which we're going to listen to now.
Yeah, so why this one? Well, the first thing is that, well, as I said before, I've been for 11 years in Belgium now. And with my wife, we have a child who's almost five now. Was born and raised in Belgium, actually speaking the both of the languages here. So Belgium is very important for me. And that's where I see myself, at least in the coming years. So I wanted to have a Belgian musician. Stromae is it's almost too easy as a choice because he's probably the most well-known Belgian artist, a singer, interpreter at this moment, I think, even though he's very scarce in his production. So that's why I went for Stromae. Papaoutai is a morceau I really like. And also a very, a tiny thing, but when I'm saying that Stromae is very known, is really known internationally, not the first time, but one, for me, the best time when I heard this song was when it was in the last time in Madagascar. So it was the year of the release of this record, okay. And I heard this song played. I don't know; it was completely random. It was a little town. We were just in a stop between two destinations, and I heard somebody playing. And I was like, okay, so now. And it was only 2013, so it was big, but not that big. Yeah. I was like, okay, he's really international now. Mm-hmm. He's all mm-hmm. over the world. I had these friends telling me, yeah, in the US, he's still playing him. And I was like, okay, that's for real.
Yeah. Okay. Let's listen to it.
This dites-moi d'où il vient. Enfin, je saurai où je vais. Maman dit que lorsqu'on cherche bien, on finit toujours par trouver. Elle dit qu'il n'est jamais très loin, qu'il part très souvent travailler. Maman dit travailler c'est bien, bien mieux qu'être mal accompagné. Pas vrai? Où est ton papa? Dis-moi où est ton papa? Sans même devoir lui parler, il sait ce qui ne va pas. Ah sacré papa, dis-moi où es-tu caché? Ça doit faire au moins mille fois que j'ai compté mes doigts. Hey. Où t'es papa, où t'es? Où t'es papa, où t'es? Où t'es papa, où t'es? Où t'es, où t'es, où papa, où t'es? Où t'es papa, où t'es? Où t'es papa, où t'es? Où t'es papa, où t'es? Qu'on y croit ou pas, y'aura bien un jour où on n'y croira plus. Un jour ou l'autre, on sera tous papa, et d'un jour à l'autre, on aura disparu. Serons-nous détestables? Serons-nous admirables? Des géniteurs ou des génies? Dites-nous qui donne naissance aux irresponsables? Hein? Dites-nous qui? Tiens, tout le monde sait comment on fait des bébés, mais personne sait comment on fait des papas. Monsieur, je sais tout, on aurait hérité, c'est ça, faut le sucer de son pouce ou quoi? Dites-nous où c'est caché, et ça doit faire au moins mille fois qu'on a bouffé nos doigts. Hey. Où t'es, papa, où t'es? Où t'es, papa, où t'es? Où t'es, papa, où t'es? Où t'es, où t'es, où papa, où t'es? Où t'es, 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 où t'es, où papa, où t'es? Papa, dis-moi où est ton papa? Sans même devoir lui parler, il sait ce qui ne va pas. Ah sacré papa, dis-moi où es-tu caché? Ça doit faire au moins mille fois que j'ai compté mes doigts. Hey. Où est ton papa? Dis-moi où est ton papa? Sans même devoir lui parler, il sait ce qui ne va pas. Ah sacré papa, dis-moi où es-tu caché? Ça doit faire au moins mille fois que j'ai compté mes doigts. Hey. Où t'es, papa, où t'es? Où t'es, papa, où t'es? Où t'es, papa, où t'es? Où t'es, où t'es, où papa, où t'es? Où t'es, 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 où t'es, où papa, où t'es?
So that was the second great track. Proposed by Ertin Renefsan, who's with me today during the program. Ertin, we're back to conclude our conversation today. And you're taking us through quite an interesting, and I must admit, although we've known each other for a few years, you've opened up a few windows on geography, on research interests that sort of adapt with time. The importance of having maybe professors who might point you in an interesting direction and being at the right place at the right time. And now to conclude, I'd like to ask a little bit about projects you've been involved in and also publications which you have either penned yourself or also overseen. Maybe the first one we could look at was something I was also happy to be able to contribute with a reflection on the Maltese audiovisual landscape. And this, in a few minutes, maybe we'll be able to open up in terms of sort of what's happening in Europe. And we know also that with the pandemic, the sort of audiovisual media services landscape has become even more important because of a lot of cultural production and consumption that has happened digitally. Could you tell us a little bit about this very interesting landscape?
Yes, so this study you are referring to, and indeed that you were happy to have you contribute to look at the Maltese case, it was a study we did for the European Commission on the audiovisual industry, but with a, especially a focus on the audiovisual media services directive, and innovations in there, and yeah, how they're going to have an impact on the audiovisual sectors. Well, first at the level of member states, and then if the law is implemented, what could be the impact of it? That was something that was very, yeah, that was the main, the core of my work for last year. We're still working on it because, actually we're going to edit a book, that's going to be published by Routledge that will be dealing with this, with the directive, and especially with the core innovations that we were looking at in the study, and also looking at quotas and the Netflix tax, how it could impact the audiovisual sectors in Europe. Mm-hmm.
In fact, on one of the many links in various languages that you find on the STEM, your institute's website, one of the articles speaks about sort of the Netflix revolution, so to speak, in inverted commas, and how it's almost a revolution that doesn't seem to end, because there's the technological aspect, there's the demand and supply, there's the financial side. I know it's a very wide and complex scenario, but maybe very briefly, what would be the highlights of what research is telling us at the moment?
That's good you mentioned the research we do on Netflix. We had indeed, for example, in June, a Netflix day that my colleagues organized, and where we tried really to taking Netflix as an example. Of course, they are the dominating player, but they're not the only platform around. There's now Disney Plus, Amazon, and so on. But they still give a very good use case or case study to consider the impact they can have on all aspects, from the production, because as is known well now, Netflix is investing a lot in content production, much more than any broadcaster in the world could. Also, and on the other side, on the impact they can have on the consumption. And yes, they have a lot of influence, and probably with the COVID crisis, it has only, let's say it went faster with the COVID crisis, because of course, at different times, but more or less in Europe and many in all the world, maybe we were stuck at home, or we had many fewer options to get out. So, we turned back to what we could do at home, and video streaming was definitely one of the media that benefited from this situation. Not their fault, but I think it helped them go faster in their in the way they implemented and their adoption by the general public. That's indeed something that is very interesting for us to look at right now.
I think sometimes a question I get, even from students, for example, who look at cultural trends, cultural aspects, is it's a bit of a the way I'll put it is quite simplistic, but obviously it's more simple than the complexity which lies below. It really is, which is when research like this follows closely what's happening in the industry and what's happening in society as well, and we'll come to that a bit later on with impacts on diversity sort of and the production, which reflects and which influences diversity. It's a bit of a chicken and egg. Does research simply study what's happening in the industry, or does research itself then influence and inform new shapes, new forms, and new behavior? So is it sort of a way of capturing reality to reflect upon, or is it also a tool to try to influence new trends and new developments?
Well, I think it's definitely a tool. Of course, it's going to be used more or less quickly, also depending on the researchers. For many topics, there's always the posture of simply not trying to influence. But at least at Smit, we really try to have an impact. So we're going to have colleagues who are going to be very present in the media, for example, because they also want to have this. And for myself, I'm more interested in the more in relations to the policymakers. So I'm always interested in all these these studies for policymakers. I'm not claiming that they're going to take all of our recommendations on board, plus all the discussions after. But still, it's a moment to talk to the sector and then to try to channel a little bit what they think really about, especially things that sometimes come from the parliament or the commission without sometimes taking into account the important aspects. And derive from what we analyze some recommendations or point that, if not recommendations, sometimes point that, okay, this is what we think is important to be considered in the coming month.
Mm-hmm.
They know that Netflix and the changes in the audiovisual sector is important, but it's also good to sometimes be a bit more precise than that.
Yes. And somehow therefore be sort of in a stronger position to actually make these recommendations that you talk about. To come to our last few minutes, Ertin, I know one of the areas which has, even today, it was clear from what you were saying, accompanied you through many phases of your research and your work, has been the aspect of cultural diversity, its representation, and somehow even how participants in the cultural sector, if they are audiences or viewers, or researchers, or people on stage, on screen, so to speak, somehow interrelate with that diversity. And recently you've also contributed to a publication titled Handbook on Cultural Economy, looking at these aspects. And one of the areas which needs this type of work and this type of effort is definitely this area. Could you roughly sort of highlight some of the main points that your research seems to be pointing at, sort of developments in the field of production, also online production, and issues of diversity?
You're definitely right that cultural diversity of cultural expression, especially online, it's the topic that is, let's say, the most important for me right now and since I've entered that career. There are two main things I'm interested in right now in relation to this. One is a question that I've been working on with for a long time now. It's the questions around diversity, around from more the concentration point of view. And this notably not only applied to the visual sector, but also to the news sector. So trying a bit to understand, when you have more and more concentration, what can be the impact on the points of views, on the topics, mm-hmm. on the, also indeed in terms of representation, on the diversity of all these aspects, on the diversity of all these features of the content.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the most, it's not the newest question, but there have been some really important changes that force scholars to think about it again.
Mm-hmm.
Simply again, the role of online platforms. We've been talking about Netflix a lot, but for the news, if you think about, the fact that in many countries, people are going to access, newspapers, mm-hmm. any kind of news via Facebook, it's very different than it changes all the strategies for these news companies because they need to find a way to be to be on Facebook, but so mm-hmm. that they are available on Facebook, the street that they are attracting people on Facebook. And then for Facebook, they probably did not expect that, but they became a forum. They became part of public sphere. So they need also to be part of the regulation. They have no choice that to enter this.
Yeah.
The other aspect that is related to this, but it's much more new. It's the stream of research I'm trying to develop on the impact of recommender systems on diversity. Basically, before, when from a more economic point of view, we're looking at diversity, you are saying, okay, there is this amount of things that is produced. When you distribute, you lose a lot of them. Like in all the small shops, you don't find all the records, all the books.
Mm-hmm.
And then consumption is going to be even more concentrated on this. Now it's a bit different because, you have a lot more available, but then the selection happens at the phase of what it gets recommended to you as a consumer, what gets displayed to you by, because Netflix has thousands of words, but they show you what 10, 20 words if you scroll than others, but definitely not the thousands. So how does it work that something gets selected or not? What is the impact on people? And then in terms of policy, what could or what should not maybe do to the policymakers? They're all coming back to this directive. There's a lot of discussion about, okay, there are quotas. How do you adapt quotas to what Netflix does? How do you also then have this rule for them to invest? You tell them, okay, it's not only that you need to have this percentage, but you also need to invest an amount of your budget in local or European content. And so
on. Yeah. 18, and that brings us to the end of our conversation.
Already?
And I thank you for summarizing many of the points that you've been developing over years now. But I think like this, at least even our listeners will have got a bit of a better idea of what this particular area, which is very wide, but also can be highlighted in a way, in a particular way. So thank you very much, Ertin, for the conversation and also for the music.
Thanks a lot, Carsten, for the invitation. That was really interesting. Thank you.
Il-tama illi dik l-intervista ma' Ertin Renef San li huwa bażat ġewwa Brussel, però kif smajtu vjaġġa ftit mhux ħażin, speċjalment qabba l-passat tiegħu twelid trobbija u baqgħet ilha tilgħal fuq fejn missanki ma' Franza qabel ma' mar il-Belġu. Uġbitkom ukoll il-mużika u jekk huwa l-każ nistidinkom terġgħu tinaqdu miegħi. Il-ġimma d-diela għal-programm liħor minn campus għal-liħor. Insemmilkom.